From Bloomsburg to Uniontown, Pittsburgh to York, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Tuesday was supposed to be Election Day, but voting has been moved to June 2nd. Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting is here to report on the impact. County and municipal governments face big budget deficits as revenue plummets in the wake of the Wuhan coronavirus pandemic. Eric Montardi of the Allegheny Institute joins us with details. And one-size-fits-all shutdowns aren't working, so it is time to safely begin reopening shuttered businesses. So says Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Chris Nicholas from Eagle Consulting in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The tug of war between legislative Republicans and Governor Tom Wolf over when Pennsylvania's economy can begin the process of reopening continued this past week. Wolf vetoed a Republican bill that would have allowed businesses to safely begin reopening and instead extended the lockdown of business activity until May 8th. In response, the State House passed a measure that would allow public and private construction projects to resume on a voluntary basis so long as safety procedures are followed. More than 1.5 million Pennsylvanians have filed unemployment compensation claims since March 15th due to the governor's actions. The number of unemployed is likely higher as state agencies have been overwhelmed and unable to process claims in a timely manner. The State Department of Health is under fire for changing the way cases of COVID-19 and related deaths are reported. This past week, State Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine announced the state is now including probable cases in the totals. Probable is defined as a person who has had symptoms of COVID-19, but who did not have testing done. The change will dramatically inflate the number of cases included in the state's count, and a similar change has been made to include probable cases in the death count. Meanwhile, a number of county coroners have disputed the health department's death counts in their counties, saying officials are overstating those death counts. Governor Tom Wolf's ban on elective surgery and other procedures has resulted in hospitals across the Commonwealth laying off staff. The order was put into effect to make medical care available for a feared surge in COVID-19 cases that did not materialize. However, the governor has not backed off his order, plunging many hospitals into fiscal crisis and prompting a wave of layoffs. But UPMC in Pittsburgh announced it will begin performing elective surgeries. Only 2% of the beds at UPMC hospitals are occupied by patients suffering from coronavirus. A spokesman for UPMC said, although the surgeries to be resumed are considered to be non-urgent because they are scheduled, they do address critical patient health treatments, such as those suffering from heart disease and cancer. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Pennsylvania was scheduled to hold its presidential primary election this Tuesday, but the date has been moved to June 2nd due to the coronavirus pandemic. But more has changed than just the date, as voters have new rules, new timetables, and even new voting machines. For all the details, we turn to veteran political consultant Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting. Chris, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Chris, this is the time you and I normally would be talking about the Pennsylvania primary on Tuesday, as it was originally scheduled for April 28th, which is a normal time for us to have a primary in Pennsylvania in a presidential election year. Not going to happen on Tuesday. Want to give us a little bit of background on that?
Well, you're right, Loman. In a presidential year, we have our primary in the fourth Tuesday in April. The other 3 years, we have it in the third Tuesday in May. So this was early for us, early for Pennsylvania, not early nationally. And because of the COVID-19 crisis, the legislature and the governor came together and decided to postpone the primary until June 2nd. So that is new territory for Pennsylvania because we have never voted in a primary in June. So for the first time that I can remember, Pennsylvania's primary will be post-Memorial Day before we even get to vote in the primary. So now everything works on a schedule, right, Loman? So now voter registration is open till later. The chance to ask for an absentee ballot or a new mail-in ballot is later. So the whole calendar shifts. And what I was concerned about, being a longtime Republican political consultant, is what does this do to the actual campaigns? Because you've been working for 6, 9, 12 months to be ready for April 28th to have your political crescendo then. And then all of a sudden, the month before, you're told, no, you have to wait an extra almost 2 months to have the primary. So, gosh, now you have to retool. So, essentially, if you were an incumbent being primary, you caught a break, because most incumbents are better financed than most challengers, not all, but most. So you are better able to apportion your resources for a longer primary because you had more resources to begin with. So you've got candidates who have to recalibrate. You have citizens, voters like you and I and your listeners to have to recalibrate. Plus this year, as we've talked about before, most every county of the state's 67 counties is bringing online new voting machines, okay? So, and now with the COVID-19 crisis, you're going to have some polling locations maybe not participate. So you've got new locations, new machines, a different date, and candidates who had the campaign longer. So it's really messy.
Very messy. And let's talk a bit about what's on the ballot. Of course, the presidential race is now over, which is really not unusual for Pennsylvania because our primary typically does fall rather late in the process. But in terms of the ballot that voters are going to see when they do ultimately go to the polls or vote by mail on June 2nd, there's still going to be some presidential maneuvering. Delegates need to be elected to national conventions. Want to talk a bit about that process?
Everybody in the state will be voting for, in the primary, will be voting for president, for presidential delegates, which are apportioned by congressional district. Everyone will be voting in the primary for our three statewide row offices, attorney general, auditor general, and treasurer, and I'll come back to that in a minute. And everybody will be voting for Congress, and also for state house. And then half of the state who live in odd-numbered state Senate districts will also be voting in the state Senate because, as we've talked before, every 2 years, half of the state Senate is up. And this year, it's time for the odd-numbered senators to be up. Now, going back to the statewide row offices, there are no primaries in either party for attorney general or treasurer. So we know those candidates there, the two incumbents are Democrats, there are two challengers, Republicans. In the race for Auditor General, there is one Republican candidate, so he doesn't have a primary, but there are six candidates in the Democratic primary for Auditor General. So that's the big one statewide you'll be looking at, because you're right, the presidential race on the Republican side, there never was a race, and, you know, Joe Biden finally sent away Bernie Sanders, so that one is now over too. So there still are a lot of important races there, but statewide, there's really only that one race, the Democratic race for Auditor General.
We are talking with Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting, veteran political consultant here in Pennsylvania. He joins us routinely here before primary and general elections. As we mentioned, Pennsylvania's primary scheduled for Tuesday, the 28th of April, has now been moved to June 2nd. And in addition to the change of date, and you touched a bit on this, but I'd like you to elaborate a bit, Chris, there have been a lot of changes to election law as well. So what Pennsylvanians can do, for example, with absentee and mail-in ballots, we're going to see some different approaches this year, correct?
Correct. So last year there was a grand bargain between our Democratic Governor Tom Wolf and the Republican-led State House and State Senate. And they finally figured out some long-awaited campaign reforms. One of them was money to help counties buy these new machines. The Republicans were pushing for the end of the big lever of voting, where you could push a button or one lever and vote for every member of one party for every office. The Democrats had wanted extended time for voter registration, and then everybody was for an easier way to vote absentee, which we now have. In the past, we had a very onerous absentee ballot system in terms of who could qualify, a college student, right? But otherwise, you had to know you're going to be sick or know you're going to be out of town. So that limited that. So now we have essentially what is referred to as no-fault absentee ballot voting, which is really good in the middle of this health crisis we have. That anyone out there listening can now, for any reason they want, they don't have to give a reason, can go online and request an absentee ballot be sent to them, as I have myself done. I did this before the date got changed, but my application still holds, and very soon I will receive, I live in Dauphin County, outside Harrisburg, I will get my ballot for the primary election. So I would urge people, whether they have health concerns or not, about going to the polling place, to request the vote by mail application. It's easy to do. It's completely legal. You have until primary election day itself to get the ballot back or to have the ballot be postmarked.
You also mentioned the fact we have most counties deploying new voting machine systems. Don't we also need the primary as sort of a shakedown cruise rather than have the general election in November be the time when we have massive amounts of voters and the biggest turnout election that you have in the four-year cycle, all voting on new machines and county election officials trying to deal with them? Isn't it really a good idea to have this sort of primary that might be a little bit lower turnout to try to debug this system?
Well, that's a very cogent point, Loman. Thanks for bringing that up. And that's how it was planned. This whole rush, and it was a rush, to buy new machines because of a lawsuit the state settled with a former third-party candidate for president was really on a really mushed-up timeline. And the Department of State said, we know it's a big deal, but we'll have the primary to work through any bugs with the new machines. And it's on both sides, Loman. It's not just voters like you and I getting used to a new way to push the buttons or put the ballot in. It's also for the workers in the counties and in the precincts to get used to a new way of doing things. I know here in Dauphin County, where you and I both live, we voted on the same types of machines for at least 25 years. So now you have all those election day workers at the precinct, the volunteers, and the county full-time workers. They have to get used to new things being set up. You're right, we do need this primary as a shakedown cruise because the turnout in November from both parties, I believe, is going to be sky high. There has been tremendous interest in this presidential race, regardless of who you support. So we're going to have record turnout, I believe. So I think that would be a good reason to do it. And maybe we won't have every single precinct that we used to have, but I think we can figure it out. I think we're smart enough to do that.
Again, we have been talking with Chris Nicholas from Eagle Consulting. Chris, tell us a bit about Eagle Consulting. Also, where can folks go to learn more?
A couple things. If you're on Twitter, I'm at Eagle63, at Eagle, the number 63. My website is eagleconsult.com. I am a Republican political consultant for more than 35 years. I also appear on a show called This Week in Pennsylvania, which airs across the state on Sundays, where we do public affairs and politics for the state. People have watched the national shows, Face the Nation, Meet the Press, and This Week in PA is the state version. So if you want to listen to even more of me, you can catch me with my Democratic colleague and our host on This Week in PA on Sundays. Thanks, Loman.
Chris Nicholas, thank you for being with us. Take care. This is the time where we normally have the Allegheny Institute report and our good friends Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi get together and have a discussion. Because of social distancing, we can't put the two of them together in the same studio. So this week I'm going to talk one-on-one with Eric Montardi, research director at the Allegheny Institute. Eric, thank you for being here.
Wellman, thank you for having me.
One of the aspects of the fallout from this whole coronavirus, COVID-19 pandemic, Eric, is going to be the impact on municipal and county governments. And there's a whole wide range of impacts, none of it, of course, good. So let's talk first about counties, and then we'll talk about cities and municipalities. If you take counties, and you're based in Allegheny County, so we'll use Allegheny County as the example, what sort of financial fallout are counties going to have to deal with as we proceed through 2020?
Well, in Allegheny County's case, the budget has already been passed for 2020 because they run on a calendar year. So now that we're here almost at the end of April, they're 4 months into the year. So they've are going to be in sort of reaction mode of, you know, will there need to be changes to the budget that come up? Now, the primary source of revenue for Allegheny County, like most other counties in the state, is property tax. The property tax for Allegheny County is supposed to raise around $382 million this year. Typically, the county property tax is paid in February. There's a 2% discount for like an early payment option, and then they go to what's called the face or the gross period, and then your taxes are due at the end of April, and then after that you go into delinquency. Well, because of the economic issues, people being laid off, furloughed, income not there to pay property taxes, one of the first things that the county did was to basically extend those periods. So the discount period was pushed back, the face period was pushed back. As of now, looking at like a deadline before delinquency of June 30th. Now, I know this week, and one of the pieces of legislation that was passed and then signed into law in Harrisburg that dealt with some of the, I think, notary and online car sales, one of the items in there was basically a permission for other local governments. I didn't see school districts mentioned in this, but other local governments, so counties and municipalities, to go ahead and have the permission to push their deadlines back as well. The other thing that Allegheny County does is it levies a lot of other taxes that it don't necessarily come back to the county, but they go to other entities. So we'll give you an instance. There's a local option sales tax in Allegheny County. That's kind of split into three different pots. Some of it goes to what are called regional assets, like libraries, parks. The other part goes to the county, and then the other part goes to the municipalities in the county. Now, obviously, with a downturn in economic activity, people aren't going out, people aren't buying stuff that's subject to the sales tax. You would assume that at some point that's going to fall. Also, with travel and tourism going down, there's a hotel tax, like Allegheny County. I think a lot of other counties in Pennsylvania have that. And that goes to pay off debt at the convention center in Pittsburgh. It goes to fund tourism agencies. That's going to most likely be down. And then there's also a tax on alcoholic beverages, not that are purchased at beer distributors or state stores. This would be like if you're going to a bar or restaurant. And then one on car rentals. And again, that money is held in a fund, and then it's used to match state money that comes from mass transit. You would think, again, now bars, restaurants being closed, people probably not coming in from the airport, renting a car, or even maybe even, you know, moving from one house to another where they need to rent a vehicle as a moving van, that would be affected as well. So what we're trying to do here with the county, looking at, you know, what's publicly available, they have numbers that show, you know, what they're spending month by month. And then there's data that would be available just as these budget reports come up to show what the trend is, what they expect is going to happen, and then when the actual collections come in to say, okay, how does this compare to last month? How does this compare to the same month last year?
In addition to the counties, municipalities, cities, townships, boroughs, they have a bit of a different tax structure. We can also expect to see some pressure on their revenues as well.
Yeah, you would think so. And again, there you're talking, you know, property taxes are in place, but then you also have earned income taxes. So again, when people are drawing a paycheck, wages, net profits, and that money goes to the, you know, the municipalities, and they're sometimes you know, splitting that with the school districts as well, that you think that would be affected. In the city of Pittsburgh's case, Again, you have some other taxes that are tied to events. There's an amusement tax that goes on to tickets for sporting events and for concerts, which those have been postponed, delayed, canceled. The city's budget is primarily its property tax. I think that's around, $150 million that's budgeted for 2020. Earned income tax is also over $100 million. So those are the two big tax sources. And then when you get to parking, there's a specific tax on business payrolls, amusement, deed transfers. I mean, that's a tax there, again, statewide. You think about that when somebody records a deed or a mortgage, that the municipality, the school district, and then also the state taxes that. So you think that revenue would be down. So the city at this point, they've kind of said, we think there's going to be a deficit this year in 2020. Again, just like the county, they're running on a calendar year. So they approved their budget in December and they started January 1st. They have not done anything with changing their deadlines on their taxes as of yet, with both the county and the city of Pittsburgh, but then also, you know, other counties, other municipalities. You think, you know, there's a host of like fees, licenses, permits. They get monies from other governments.
All across the Commonwealth, every municipality, every county is going to have to struggle. You've used Allegheny County and Pittsburgh as examples here, but all those taxes apply across the state to whatever county or municipality you may be residing in as you're listening to this. So keep an eye out, because the impact of this on governments at all levels is going to be very, very significant as we try to unpack all the damage here over the next few months. We have been talking with Eric Montardi. Eric is research director at the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy. They are, of course, located in Pittsburgh. And Eric, tell us just a bit about the Allegheny Institute. Also, where can folks go online? I know you've had some blogs and other research papers on these topics if folks want to read more.
We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan research and education organization. The best way to read our work is to go to our website, which is www.AlleghenyInstitute.org. If you'd like to get our policy brief that we send out, you can sign up online through the website as well. We have a Twitter account that people can follow us on. And, of course, they can always hear us here.
Right here on Lincoln Radio Journal, Eric Montardi. Hopefully you and Frank will be back together next month. We'll talk with you then. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you, Loman.
The overly broad shutdown of state businesses has had a profoundly negative effect. And we must be smarter in how we reopen the state's economy. We hear more now from Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
On March 20th, and for those of you counting, that was over 5 weeks ago, Americans for Prosperity CEO Emily Seidel issued the following statement in light of the moves by states like PA to shut down all non-essential businesses. We've already seen communities and businesses come together in extraordinary ways to care for each other. We should embrace this response, not bring it to a halt. We can achieve public health without depriving the people most in need of the products and services provided by businesses across the country. If businesses are shut down, where will people who are most in need get the things they need to care for themselves and others? Rather than blanket shutdowns, the government should allow businesses to continue to adapt and innovate to produce the goods and services Americans need while continuing to do everything they can to protect the public health. This was true here in PA. On March 19th, the governor changed strategy around issuing closures on a county-by-county basis and instead issued a statewide shutdown of businesses accompanied by a statewide stay-at-home order. The nuances of business operations can neither be respected or taken into account with any one blanket order. In other states, we saw fabric stores responding to the mask shortages by having pickup orders of fabric for home sewers to use to create masks for family and community members in need. Here in Pennsylvania, that wasn't a possibility after March 20th. Yet, we saw numerous articles discussing the need for masks, like the story we heard about in Pittsburgh featuring Paramount Senior Living. Just a few days after the shutdown, it was reported that Paramount staff and patients were using coffee filters and rubber bands to make their own face masks. The consolation business owners from Erie to Enola were offered was the ability to apply for a waiver through the Department of Community and Economic Development. And with the thousands that were submitted beginning Saturday, March 21st, the review and processing became an immediate problem. The ambiguity behind whose waiver applications were being processed and of those which were being approved or denied became a source of extreme duress for those men and women who applied and waited, many of whom never received a communication. This frustration was then channeled into legislation that we saw addressing the reopening of certain selected industries. When considering the rationale outlined in several of the memorandums around these bills, it was evident that the ideas both could and should be applied to other businesses and workers. Notions like open-air operations or the general consideration of the impact on PA households when they could otherwise be operating safely. And so instead of those measures, AFPPA chose to support Senate Bill 613, which applied standards and clarity around which businesses could safely operate. Through the application of the Essential Critical Infrastructure Workforce Advisory List, developed by the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, greater transparency and nuance could have been afforded around the classification of an essential life-sustaining business, providing a path for businesses and workers that met those CISA list inclusions to reopen and return to work, ensuring the needs of communities, from workers providing for their families to businesses providing consumer demands and needs, were met both timely and safely. Governor Wolf vetoed this legislation and instead chose to announce a multiple-week wait around reopening construction and several measures like allowing the online purchase of vehicles. This addresses the needs of a couple of sectors of workers, notwithstanding the delay. As you listen to this commentary, many Pennsylvanians will be navigating week six of being out of work. We will continue to scale the needs of all Pennsylvania workers who can responsibly operate as we navigate COVID-19. As we look forward to the conversations we'll need to have around the workforce and the losses they've incurred, removing the barriers Harrisburg has erected in the occupational licensing and employment policy space will be paramount. To find us on Facebook, search at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director for Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WJSA-FM in Jersey Shore, along with WCCL-FM and WBHV-AM in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.
The top of 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 the top of